We welcome back right here in the studio to visit with us our friend Sean Latch from the Versant Power Astronomy Center and the Jordan Planetarium. Sean, welcome back.
Thanks so much. Great to be back on.
You visit with us every month. I feel like this month has gone by quickly. Not that I'm happy to see you, but I feel like you were just here about 10 days ago.
Yeah, it seems like it has flown by.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, playing a little catch up.
We'll want to talk about what's going on in the month of August at the center and up at the skies, and then a couple of things I want to ask you about. But let's start with August programs up at the center getting underway next Friday. Tell me a little bit about Dream to Fly.
Yeah, so this is a program that takes a look at the history of flight from hot air balloons all the way through modern aviation. We also take a look at some of the ways that NASA is involved in commercial aviation and flight in general. And so it's a really fun program and sort of uses the planetarium to explore that topic. We even take a look at the Bangor International Airport.
Ooh,
a little bit.
Nice.
And talk about some of its unique features, too.
Oh, very good. Now, this Sunday, this will be the last day for 3-2-1 liftoff?
That is correct, yeah. So our children's program this month, 3-2-1 liftoff, you join Elon the hamster and you get to learn a little bit about rocket science, blast off into space as he tries to get a robot friend back up to his spaceship. The Sunday after, of course, the first Sunday in August, we'll be starting with The Secrets of Gravity. And so you join Albie the robot and Luke, who are trying to figure out some secrets of the universe and figure out a little bit about gravity along the way.
Excellent. The music program for the month of August, a little Zeppelin.
Yeah, we finish up Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon this Sunday. So, again, last chance to catch that. And then, yes, Led Zeppelin returns for the month of August. Always a fun band, and, of course, a lot of folks really love it.
And then summer matinee shows, you've got great stuff going every Tuesday and Thursday afternoon through the month of August.
Yeah, a variety of different topics. Of course, tomorrow afternoon we have Magic Globe, A Story of the Seasons, and I think August 2nd, I think it is, I believe, Big Bird, One World, One Sky. So, yeah, just a constantly rotating group of programs there, and gives the folks a chance to catch up if they've missed something or to see some of the programs that they really enjoy.
And what can you tell us about, wow, the Week of Welcome?
So a Week of Welcome is basically that's when students are coming back to campus, and we typically do special programming all throughout. So we'll have a variety of different programs, some special programs on Friday night, but then also Saturday all day and Sunday. So again, a great chance for folks to come and check out a variety of different programs in our library, some music shows and some regular public programs too.
Excellent. Now, we won't see the meteor shower that's happening this weekend, will we?
We can. You just have to get up really early.
Ah, okay.
So Delta Aquarius meteor showers basically peaks the morning of the 29th, evening of the 28th. And the 28th, we have a new moon, so it's a really good time to catch those. You'll get somewhere between, 10 to 20 meteors an hour at the peak. But the thing about the Delta Aquarius, while there's not a huge amount of meteors, they go a long time. So they actually will bleed into the Perseids, which happen around the middle of August,
right,
which is around the, typically peaks around the 12th or 13th. The bad news there is it peaks near a full moon, so the Perseids probably not going to be as good of a shower this year. So your Delta Aquarius better than the Perseids.
All right, we're talking with Sean Latch from the Versant Power Astronomy Center. Let's start with those first images from the James Webb Space Telescope. Wow.
Yeah, just really blew me out of the water. I mean, really incredible imagery. Everything from, the deepest image of the universe we have, and that was taken, in like 12 hours compared to, days of time that used to take Hubble, and they've seen back farther than before, with one of the galaxies measured to be, 13.1 billion light years away. And when you think about the universe being around, 13.8 billion years, in age, that means they're looking back very close to the beginning of the universe with that first image. And what's really amazing is all of the images, pretty much, they're galaxies in. I mean, this planetary nebula, which is, in our, obviously in our Milky Way galaxy, what's going to happen to our star, the sun, at the end of its life cycle. But then there's galaxies that you see in that image as well. So it's just amazing. This telescope just keeps seeing more and more galaxies. And Stefan's Quintet, which is a real famous group of galaxies.
Well, that was the one I was so
impressed
with.
That was my favorite, and definitely, of course, from those who remember It's a Wonderful Life. You know, those were the galaxies at the beginning of the program that were the angels. But, I mean, you really see the incredible detail, and it is amazing because you have one of those galaxies that's only about 40 million light years away. The others are about 160 million light years away, so much farther. But just the amazing detail and the interaction of those, you know, is incredible. So really a really beautiful image. And then, of course, Eta Carinae, you know, just spectacular star formation region, you know, and really seeing that in incredible detail. So these first images, you know, are really, really wonderful. They just give a little bit of a taste of what I think what's to come. And this telescope, I think, is really going to revolutionize the way we look at our universe. In fact, it already has in terms of just the sheer number of galaxies. You know, there were several thousand galaxies taken in basically what was a grain of sand held at arm's length, that much coverage of the sky, and you just see, you know, thousands of galaxies there.
Hey, it's mind-boggling to even think about it here. And now, will there be scheduled releases of images? How will this work going forward?
So it's one of the things right now, even though there's only been the, you know, the initial images that were released, there are images that are coming out. And when certain scientific groups release those images, they'll be, you know, available. Like there's been a few additional ones of galaxies that have been released, like M74, which is a galaxy in Pisces. And a few others. So, but it's going to be a little while before NASA does probably more official releases. We're probably looking at fall for those. But I would say keep an eye on the JWST website. You can just look up JWST and NASA, and you'll come right to their homepage, and they'll be keeping up to date on official releases. But what is amazing is, again, you can see stuff that is being released here and there by different groups of scientists. You know, so you'll see a few additional images coming out.
Fantastic.
Or time.
Well, I love it. So great so far. And then I want to ask you about this, the news about a week and a half or so ago about the radio signal that's they've received somewhere along the way. I think it's called a fast radio burst. Can you explain, first of all, what that all means?
So there are these signals that we have called fast radio bursts, which typically are from distant, you know, oftentimes are from very distant sources. And they think with a lot of these, like generally they think a lot of the fast radio bursts may be two neutron stars, which are basically colliding and combining. It's one of those things, you know, that we typically will look for with gravitational wave detectors, kind of like colliding black holes that we look for with that. But basically you get these really fast radio signals that are faster than most other sources. And what do we mean by fast? Well, if you look at, there's a pulsar inside the Crab Nebula that, you know, spins 30 times a second. So if you think of something that's even faster than that. And typically the burst is there, and then you won't see it again for a while, and then it will come back. So that's one of the things that they're seeing with these fast radio bursters.
Now, I think some people, when they hear radio signal, they think, oh, well, someone's trying to communicate with us. It's not that kind of radio signal.
Well, I mean, you know, radio energy is out there in our universe. And when we look at, you know, a variety of different things in astronomy, we use all, you know, I say that we use multi-wavelength astronomy, which is kind of like if you went to a doctor and all they could do is look at you, they could really only see if you had a rash or a cut or, you know, something sticking through your skin, which heaven forbid. But, you know, when you're using these other wavelengths, basically all the wavelengths, like, you know, JWST is looking in infrared, but we have telescopes that look in radio, and they're going to, you know, see different things and different energy levels in the universe. And so it gives us a better picture of our overall universe as a whole.
Now, am I right that, as I understood it, what made this interesting and unique is that the signals lasted a little longer than normal and that they came at regular intervals?
Yeah, it's one of those things that was a little bit unexpected. So they'll probably have to do some follow-up observations to, you know, to figure out what's exactly going on. Because, yeah, usually fast radio bursters, they'll happen, then they'll be gone, and then they're irregular in terms of when we, you know, when we see them. So that was kind of an interesting find.
Now, is there a branch of the government that's listening for these signals, or is this mostly individual astronomers that are doing this?
I think it's more, you know, it really tends to be radio astronomers who are looking for these different signals and often are detecting, you know, detecting different things. But again, we know that they're not necessarily, you know, little green creatures out there, right, or little gray creatures out there trying to, you know, to connect to us. But we do, you know, we're always trying to figure out, you know, what some of these energies mean and how they're affecting the overall, you know, evolution and change in our universe.
Well, I'm just hoping if they're picking up anything we're sending out that they're not paying close attention right now. That signal from today gets out there, that's it. No one will ever reach out.
Well, it is kind of interesting. You know, one of the programs that we do once in a while where we take a virtual flight through the universe, and we do look at where the radiosphere boundary is from Earth. And you're basically, you know, the earliest signal strong enough to kind of penetrate our ionosphere happened around 1939, around the time of the Munich Games.
Right.
And, you know, so those were, you know, so, I mean, basically you have this thing that's, you know, 85, 90 light years in radius, or 180 to 200 in diameter. While there are exoplanets in that range, we don't think any of them have, you know, the possibility of habitable life. So, but you never know. And then they'd have to figure out what we're saying. Who knows?
Right.
You know,
Good luck with that.
Right.
Well, Sean, thanks as always. Great to see you again. I hope your August goes well. And we'll check in as we close in on the month of September.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. It's Sean Latch from the Versant Power Astronomy Center, Jordan Planetarium at the University of Maine.